Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, you're listening to Film Talks On Air, and I'm your host, Jane Ross. Joining me from the sunny town of Whakatane is Hineani Melbourne. Kia ora, Hineani.
Kia ora, Jane. Kia ora, everyone listening.
And how are you today?
I'm fine. I can hear the neighbours starting to mow their lawns because, like everyone else, the weather's been crazy. One day it's beautiful and fine and the next day it's wet. So our lawns are thriving. Thank you.
Yes, I just had mine done yesterday too. It's a wonderful time to be catching up on those things in spring, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I am so delighted to be talking with you today because I think that you have had an incredible life and career working in the Aotearoa New Zealand screen industry. I would love to start by asking you how you became interested in that career.
Well, I think we've always been a family of storytellers. Because, you know, it's My grandmother would tell us stories by the fire while she crocheted, and they would be actually stories of her being brought up by her grandmother, who was brought up by her grandmother. Mm. And so we'd have this whole lineage of people who, and they passed on all of their knowledge orally. So we were a family that loved telling stories, and I enjoyed stories. I was an avid reader, loved writing, and loved making up stories.
It sounds like a lot like my experiences as well with my Irish grandmother. I used to sit at her feet and listen to her stories from the old country, and I think that I inherited the gift of loving to tell stories as well. So nice to know that you have that connection too. You started with children's programs, didn't you?
Yes, I. Well, I'd actually been working as a journalist, and when I left university, there was a newspaper called Mana, and it was very idealistic. It was supposed to tell the story of Auckland and the many communities there, and it was published in 8 languages, including Maori and English, wow. Samoan, Tongan. It was run by people who wanted to make a change. A lot of them were seen as radicals, and it was fun. You know, you did everything from selling the papers on the street corners to doing the interviews and setting the typeset, because that's how long ago it was.
So this would be early 1980s, and what were you studying? Yes. Were you at Auckland University?
I was at Auckland University, yes. I left home thinking, I told everyone I was going to university, but actually I just couldn't wait to leave home, as you are, went 17. and I ended up working at Tip Top Factory, but I was only there a couple of weeks, and someone got a promotion after, I don't know, 12 years, and they went from where I was to decorating ice cream cakes. And I thought, oh, 12 years to that. I'm going to university tomorrow.
Good choice.
Like my mother wanted me in the first place.
And what did you study while you were there?
Oh, so it was in the good old days when you got actually paid to go to university. And I studied archaeology, Maori, and social something or other. It was a long time ago. It was before emails.
Yeah,
but it was really interesting.
Yeah, I was about to say, look, that mix actually sounds really interesting. So from about the time that you graduated, you were interested in researching?
Yeah, I was just curious. You know, it was a big wide world. I'd been growing up in a small town of Kawero in the Bay of Plenty, and And I just wanted to know what was out there in the great big world. And the only reason I took Māori, because I didn't really want to, was that my uncles were the lecturers and they wouldn't sign anything unless I agreed to take Māori. So I had a double degree in archaeology and Māori.
Sounds fascinating. And that was a stepping stone for you into working at TVNZ in children's and young persons programming.
Yes, I did a few other jobs between, but I was always interested in telling stories, you know, so I did a bit in the newspaper. I think the first story I ever wrote for the newspaper, full of mistakes. I still see the story now. And was Bastion Point, was the occupation on Bastion Point, and I was doing it. That was my very first interview. And so I was always interested in telling stories any way you could. And I met, I happened to land in Christchurch, and they happened at TVNZ in Christchurch did children's programs, and they were looking for someone to hire as a researcher there, and that's how I began in television. And I'd been sort of hanging around trying to get in anyway. So I started as a researcher in children's programs in What Now? I think it was the second year that What Now was on air.
Wow. Well, I'm old enough to remember that. And, it was,
it's still on air.
And it was exciting to watch that. You know, at the weekends, it was one of those things that you couldn't miss. But you did a big jump from children's programming to working for Koha.
Oh, it wasn't that big a jump. I was, you know, it was just, again, I think it was curiosity. I had done a few stories for children's programs and tried a bit of drama and today in history. And I think that's what the kind of atmosphere it was at that time. You could try things because it was more like a public service than it is now. And you could move around. They did a lot of in-house training. So you know, they'd send you to Dunedin or Wellington to learn different aspects of how a television channel worked because, you know, it was relatively new in New Zealand then. And so most of the people that trained us were from the BBC. So we all learned how to speak properly, proper English, and not like as if we'd come from Kawero where everyone spoke of this hybrid of Dutch, English, Māori, and Scandinavian.
I forget that's how it was. It's interesting to look back on that time. Did you work with my friend Lawrence Whariro on Koha?
Yes, I did. I was his director, and he was always the reporter because he loves talking.
He does.
So we've been friends for many, many years, yes.
Yeah, oh, lovely. I interviewed him many years ago, and I loved the report that he did with Ramai Hayward, who, of course, is from the Wairarapa, and I've screened Rewi's Last Stand as part of the film festival that I program here. So that's my connection back to him, and I just saw that, yeah, you were his director. That's really cool to know.
Well, Rewi's Last Stand, I always, sorry, I've got a bit of a cold. It's the pollen in the air.
It's that time.
But Rewi's Last Stand was actually quite inspirational for me. It was the first time I'd seen a film that was about Māori. It was about New Zealanders. It was in Māori. And I actually became quite close to Ramai Hayward towards the latter part of her life and was really honoured to, you know, to get to know her quite well. And she became a hero, you know, a heroine for me of the possibilities of being in film, because she was probably the first woman camera operator, let alone a Māori woman, a camera operator. She was also a director and a producer. Mm. And a stunning, beautiful actress. So,
yes.
You know, and she was an amazing woman. And I always think, gosh, I should write something about her.
Yeah, well, I definitely feel that she is to be celebrated and yeah, an incredible pioneering wahine in our screen industry. Now, I see that you were also then moving after Koha. You continued directing and researching and also producing. And I can see that you had quite a varied sort of catalogue of things that you were working on, including a documentary on the Māori Women's Welfare League. Tell me about that experience.
Well, that was amazing. They were amazing women, the grand dames, we called them. And when they said something, everyone, including the Prime Minister, listened. They were beautiful. They were articulate. They were a force to be reckoned with. And when they told you or your producer to do something, we did it. They were very, you know, a very powerful group of women that I've always pay homage to, because they deeply influenced my life. I had wanted to direct in the field at that time, and, you know, people don't get shocked, but in those days, girls didn't do that stuff. You know, they did the typing and the researching and the production assistant work. I used to get annoyed because I'd research these great stories. I thought they were great. And, you know, as I was also very modest and quiet then. But, then some guy would grab the story, go out and butcher it, in my opinion. So I wanted to direct, but in those days there weren't actually that many women directors, and I think Merita Mita can attest to that. So I kept banging on the door, and one day the Māori Women's Welfare League Grand Dames heard that there was this, you know, crazy young woman who wanted to direct in the field, and the boys wouldn't let her. So they came in, had a little chat to my boss, and the next thing I'm out there directing in the field. So, yeah.
That sounds amazing.
They were amazing. And, you know, but it also meant that you had an obligation, as they saw themselves as working for the people. So, you know, while I've got, it looks like a kind of hodgepodge of history of working all over the place in the screen industry, the drive was actually about trying to get Māori on screen. I wanted to see people like me on screen. I wanted my children, not that I had any, but my sisters did, and I wanted them to see other Māoris on screen. I wanted to see great stories about Māoris. I wanted to see Māori myths and legends, for example, which I eventually did too.
Yeah.
I wanted to see Māori stories. I wanted to see some of the yarns that I'd grown up with and the stories. So that was it always has been my driving force, and of course the Māori language. So when you look at it kind of, and I was always trying to find a gap to go into, which is probably why, you know, it's got TVNZ, TV3, whoever, whatever else, that wherever else I could get a job that was interested in allowing me to tell Māori stories.
Would you say that Waka Huia was a really important series for you to work on?
Oh, yes. Okay, this is true confession, but my Māori was virtually non-existent when I Waka Huia started. But there were very few Māori researchers at that time, television researchers, and this is in the day before Google. Okay, so you couldn't put in Sir James Henare and Google him and find out all the information. You actually had to ring people and talk to people and go and visit people to find, you know, to get the information, to get him to agree to meet us and to talk on camera and those kinds of things. And that was my role in Waka Huia, and also training others who had just joined, but their Māori was much better than mine, so that they were going to be the researchers and the presenters. And my job was to train them to do that, to find stories and how to shape a story and how to put a story together.
That would have been amazing.
It was amazing. Yeah. We met some incredibly interesting people who had never talked to a camera before. We went to communities and where, the whole community would turn out because they'd never had a camera crew there before.
Wow.
And we were so well fed. Luckily, we were young then and it all seemed to drop off. But we were very, very honoured and very privileged. And some of the stories are just relevant to today. So an example is that last year, a colleague that I'm working with on radio said to me, my mum and the people at Ao Marae would like to thank you. And I'm going, what for? And apparently I had been at the marae and we had recorded their elders speaking and singing songs and telling stories that they thought had been lost.
Wow.
For Wakahoia.
Yeah.
And they found one of the DVD, not DVD, what is it, tapes. There, and they managed to find a machine to play it, which in itself was a miracle. And the songs that they thought they'd lost stories they thought they'd lost were on those tapes. And so, this young woman, amazing young woman, was just sent by them because she saw it. She saw the tape, the program, and says, "Oh, I work with her. That's my producer now." And I was the director at the time. So, these stories are so important, not just for that moment and to fill that hour on television, but also and the whole purpose was for future generations.
It's capturing really important oral histories, isn't it?
Yes, yes. That, no one could write down. Ngata wrote it down, but a lot of the tunes were missing and a lot of the stories behind the songs were missing. So so we were privileged to be able to make a bit of a contribution to a huge library of stories in Te Reo Māori about small communities, marae and families that otherwise would have been lost.
Amazing. Now, I'm looking at your CV, and from around the year 2000, 2010, you spent a lot of time working in Māori broadcasting, but also working on policy, performing arts, television. I can even see a sci-fi horror short film in here. and also working from Wakahuia and Māori television. I can see that you also spent some time looking at, working in short film production as well. How did you find that transition from television into film?
It was great. I mean, some of the rules and regulations, you're working with different funders, they've got different rules. You're answerable to people and you're thinking, have they ever told a story in their life? Have they ever made a film? Mm-hmm. Have they ever been behind a camera? Do they write, having to learn how to work. It's the system has probably puts up as many challenges as actually the fun and joy of telling a story and creating a story and like the sci-fi ones out of, just sitting there telling yarns and getting the yarn gets bigger and bigger and then someone says, we should write that down. And we do and make it. So, I mean, it looks like work, but a lot of it was quite fun and, we were young and energetic and idealistic and we just did it.
I can see that you worked with Rachel House, an incredibly talented woman and amazing cinematographer, director of photography, Leon Narby. The Winter Boy. What was that experience like?
That was great. Rachel is a force to be reckoned with. She is incredibly focused and talented. And she actually wanted a DOP, and I can't remember her name, a woman, and director of photography, but she wasn't available. And I just happened to hear through, because it's a small community, I just happened to hear that Leon Nabi had just come back from Samoa and was looking around for a little job to tide him over until he worked on some big feature film. And so, you know, nervously I rang him up and offered him a job. He said, yes, how much? And I said, 50, and $50 like a day. And not knowing that, you know, he earned more than that an hour or half hour, but he was such a gentleman and such a professional.
How lovely. Or,
you know, and so willing to share.
Amazing. I do really admire our New Zealand film community for its generosity and its passion to tell stories.
Oh, yes, they're amazing. And people will work on a and we were having problems because there happened to be quite a few projects on at the same time. But the moment we said we had Leon, oh, my gosh, we had crews banging on the door to work with him, because, you know, to work with Leon Nabi, beside Leon Nabi as a technician, is a huge boost to your CV. So, yeah, that was very, and he was such a great person to work with.
I can see that from that time, 2010, to the current day, that you've continued to work on Wakehuia producing for television Māori language archival series, that you've also continued to work in television and in short film and on documentary series as well. I'm interested in your radio work. So tell me about Radio Wātea.
Well, I've always quite liked radio. Do you remember those days when they used to, well, they probably still do it, but Radio New Zealand used to have those drama in the evenings, and I used to love them. I love stories, and even the Sunday Kids programs, that's another project I'd love to do, is bring back children's programs for Wātea, for Māori radio stations and in Te Reo Māori would be fun. But also at the same time, I had been working in a whole lot of fields, like I'd been director of Ngā Aho Whakaari, which is like a union. It's more like a guild to support Māori workers in the screen industry. And I had become, my family had left home, and so I was suddenly empty nest. And then the job was so stressful, and I thought, no, I'm going to try something else. So I decided to continue, and I did a master's degree at at Te Wānanga o Aotearoa. And then I thought, oh, I think that was fun. I'll try a PhD now. And I've enrolled for one at Awanui Aorangi, and then quickly realized I couldn't run this political body, which is what basically Ngā Aho Whakaari was, always agitating for change in the screen industry and to promote Māori rights and also training. I couldn't do that, do my PhD, and so I thought, I'll try something different. I'll go back to radio that I had done before. And so while I was thinking that, a job popped up, and I thought, oh, yeah, that's me. And I started at Radio Wātea not long after.
And it's a news and current affairs radio show?
Yes, well, I had worked in news and current affairs somewhere along the line sometimes. And so I produced that. It's a morning show with Dale Husband, and we go nationwide and provide Māori what Dale says is a Māori viewpoint on what's happening in Aotearoa. And, well, we don't know what's happening actually with Māori news at the moment, but it's been a really great experience, and I really enjoy working with a lot of young people coming through and helping them in their career paths. So, yeah, that's where I am. That's one of my jobs at the moment.
Well, it is just one of your jobs, because in addition you're doing a PhD, and that is full on. But you've also been this year a co-producer of a feature documentary film and series. What's that?
Oh, it's an amazing series. Actually, I only jumped on board to help them and ended up producing. So it's with Kim Webby, and she was fascinated with this whole connection between some Māori communities, particularly coastal ones, and Wales. And so she started shooting a little series. It started off just a few shots and thinking, oh, maybe I'll make a doco out of it. And now we're so basically it follows Ngāti Wai, which is in the far north, who have brought back traditional customs of harvesting whales that are stranded. So, Doc normally just buries them, but traditionally Māori would use everything on the whale after karakia and blessings and a whole lot of things. They would use the oil for, for rongoā, for medicine. They would use bones for decorations or tools and so forth. And so they after a long discussion, shall we say, with Doc, they started getting permission to harvest whales that are stranded. And so Kim Webby was working with Mike Jonathan, who's just finished his feature film Ake Ake Tonu. And Mike is also an amazing DOP, and he and Kim would drop whatever they were doing, shoot up north, shoot film for a couple of days, and then come back. And they were working with a producer who was quite sick at the time, and I happened to meet Kim, and she said, oh, would you help out? And I said, oh, yeah, I'll just help, help him produce. And then, unfortunately, he passed, and I ended up being co-producer on it. So unfortunately, I must say that I'm actually not doing as much as I normally would, because I'm just trying to finish this PhD as soon as possible.
PhD. Now, I have done an MA, and I know that that was really hard work, but I imagine how hard it is to get a PhD over the line. So congratulations that you're almost there. Almost there, aren't you?
Almost, yeah. Some days I think, wow, I'm nearly there, and other days I think, I'm never going to make it.
Tell us about your thesis.
So I was working for – so this is a long story. I was working for Ngā Aho Whakaari. I think I was the chair of the Ngā Aho Whakaari board at the time. And we heard that TVNZ had signed a license with Getty Images to give them the right to license their 50-year library for international commercial use. So what that means is that if it's in the library and it's interesting to someone in, I don't know, the UK, and then they would buy, pay for the license, TVNZ would get their cut, and that image would be used for whatever the person paid for. Now, the trouble is a lot of TVNZ hold some of the biggest, largest library of footage of New Zealand Māori in the country. It's bigger than they and Radio New Zealand hold all this footage, and that included Wakahuia. And I was thinking, oh my God, I can't let them do that because of all the responsibility I felt as a person who had, you know, basically gone to these communities and filmed these people and filmed some amazing things and let it be used for commercial use throughout the world. It's not, you know, it's not kosher. It's not right. So we ended up in a bit of a tussle with TVNZ. And in the end, TVNZ, in a bit of a panic, said, no, okay, we won't use any of the Māori, we won't license any of the Māori footage internationally. So that was the compromise we came to. And now, but what's going to happen to that footage? What if this government, which, or the next government, or the government three times from here, decides to sell TVNZ and its archives, because its archives are going to be probably more valuable than the hardware and the buildings that they're in. So that's what set me off to study, you know, who owns the cultural content of the New Zealand screen industry. And so that's what my study's about, who owns it, who controls it, and what are the future prospects for the cultural content of our screen industry.
You are an intelligent, amazing woman, and I am wishing you so well with this final push to get your PhD done. It has been an absolute delight to talk to you today and to get to know your story. You do tell stories very well.
Well, just to add one little thing is that if you want to make a really good living, don't concentrate on just Māori language and Māori culture, because the budgets aren't that big. Mm. Be like Taika, go out and, you know, make a giant movie about, you know, space people or something, something different.
Wise and then come back and wisdom. Do smaller.
Yeah, then come back and do something else. Mm.
Thank you so much for taking time to chat with me today.
All right, pleasure talking to you.
Nga mihi nui, kia koe.
Kia koe hoki, kia ora.